Hey guys, it's me, Jordan, from Artsy Fartsy Immigrants, and we have some mixed news today. Unfortunately, I can't provide you with a full brand new show today. As you can probably understand, there's always some sort of scheduling issue. I myself or Mo this week, we're always so busy, so we try to always bring you something different or special or new, and sometimes we just can't get around to doing it. So this week, we are going to replay one of our favorite episodes, and the reason that I decided to do this was because last week we had the extreme pleasure of having director and writer Alireza Golafshan on the show to talk about his new film, JGA, or JGA. Which was such a cool movie and really funny, and he was so insightful and so easygoing and easy to talk to. But Ali is actually not the first, he was the first director and writer we've had on the show, but he's not the only one, I should say. We actually, a few months back, we had the pleasure of having David Helmut, on the program to talk about this television show, Wrong, that Efi and myself had the pleasure of. I keep saying everyone has the pleasure, but it was really pleasurable, and it caused a lot of pleasure, and I feel pleasured. David gave me, he pleasured me, is what I'm trying to say. And Ali, too. They both pleasured me, and I feel pleasured because they were so pleasurable. And David talked about the show Wrong, which Efi and I, with great enjoyment, got to work on. I of course did the score, I did the music for it. Efi was in the writer's room, she wrote two of the episodes. The show is still currently streaming and doing very well on RTL Plus, so you should watch it. And if you're a personal friend of mine and you want to watch it but you don't want to pay for a new streaming service, well, come hit me up, send me a message, because I have an account. And I'll share it with you. Why not? I'll just give you the credentials and you can watch it. And I don't think it's geo-blocked. I think you can watch it in any country. I was able to stream it in America, which is kind of cool. So if you can speak German, download the show and watch it. I think even the first or second episode is currently on YouTube. I'm not totally sure about that, but someone told me that. But I'll have to check. Anyway, it's most definitely still on RTL Plus, and you should just go watch it because it's very funny. Anyway, we had David on the show a few months back to talk about, he directed the show. He was the head writer, showrunner, creator, everything. He's the brains behind it. He's also like one of the lead actors in the show. So he did a lot of things. You know, the show Wrong is like his baby. And we were very pleasured to find out that we have a second season. So the writers sat down earlier this spring, actually when I was in America, and they wrote a second season to the show already. So it's going to film this fall, and probably by the end of the year or by early next year, you'll have a season two of Wrong. So make sure to watch the first one so that you're caught up for the shenanigans that are sure to take place in season two. Trust me, they go darker and more wrongerer than you could ever imagine. But yeah, we had Ali on the show. I thought it'd be cool to have David on the show to see back-to-back directors, writers, creators, how they think and how they're like very different people, just to see some perspective. And also, I think they're both very interesting and worth listening to twice. So if you haven't had the chance to listen to David's episode, I'm very excited for you to hear it for the first time. And if you are a longtime listener, I hate to do a rerun, but we just didn't have any other option this week, so I hope you can still enjoy listening to my solo interview with David. I had to do it over Zoom a few months back, earlier in the year when Mo was like never available, and so now when we have the pleasure of Mo's presence on the show, we'll try and get David on again so we can all interview him. But yeah, so I hope that this episode pleasures you, and I hope that you feel pleasured and pleasurable, because it's so pleasant. Anyway, I'm going to stop talking because I have to run, but thank you so much for being here. And without further ado, this is the interview with David Helmut. I'm very pleased to have you on my show. Finally, we got this locked down after some time.
Thank you for the invitation.
Always, man. So maybe we should talk a little bit first about how we started working together. I mean, you know, you have this brand new show that just came out, right?
Yeah, that's right. I'm pretty happy. It's online. The people like it.
The people love it.
Yeah, they love it. I don't even understand why, you know, because I watched it for like over 100 times and then you lose the objectivity in your, and you're just, in the end, you just hope that the people will like it. And yeah.
Did you?
Amen.
I've directed like small things myself, and I know that process of watching things over and over and over, and like it kind of loses its magic. Was there jokes or scenes in this show that you saw so many times that you no longer found them funny?
Like right now?
Sure. Like you've seen them so many times.
Yeah. Of course. I have to watch it like over and over again. And then what I'm trying to do is actually not lose the first spirit, the first emotion I had watching it or I had experiencing it on the set. That's what I'm just trying to do, because, you know, you have 8 episodes, and of course if you watch a joke like more than 10 times, you stop laughing at some point.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, you have to take notes and then just remember the first spark of the joke.
I believe
in that joke now.
I know that the actors followed screenplays, of course. Like there's the, you have the skeleton of what the blocking is, mm-hmm. and what the actions are and where, you know, how A gets to B and what moves the story along. But since you directed it and since you're a fan of improvisation, how many average takes would you say you did for a normal scene?
We didn't have so much time, you know, so because we promised the network that we will make it in like 35 days, and we always knew
that's crazy, by the way.
That's crazy because it's 8 episodes, like 25 minutes each, 35 days, so we have to do like more than 5 minutes a day, something like that. And that's crazy.
That's really crazy. Yeah,
because you actually do 2 minutes if you want to do it right. So, yeah, I think the commercial, my work on all of the commercials before helped me to work on a set and to decide fast and to know what I want.
So yeah,
I'm really quick. I don't know why, but I can really I'm fast deciding what I want.
Do you think you've always been like that since you were young, or did you craft that skill over time and eventually find that with your commercial work?
I mean, the difference to other directors is, for me, it was like a natural thing to do, like all the jobs to film with my own camcorder and to edit it on VHS, and it was like I began doing everything. So other directors who go to film school, they just learn directing often, and you know, I learned camera first, and so I did a camera guy. How do you call it? Ausbildung in English.
You did like a degree in cinematography.
I did a degree in cinematography first, And then I worked as an assistant on movie sets, and I learned that everyone hates the director because he doesn't know any technical stuff, you know?
Yeah, that happens a lot.
Most of the directors, they go on set and they just say, okay, I want to do it like that, and that. And everyone on the crew is like, oh, stupid asshole. He doesn't know.
He doesn't know that's not possible.
That's not possible. And yeah, not today, like all of the stuff he wants. And I was one of the guys saying, stupid asshole. So I learned very quick that if I'm going to be a director at some point in my life, I just have to know all the jobs on the set I can understand what the problems are and what is possible, you know, because if you and now it's funny because if I do commercials and I go on a set and you know, often you have like a crew of people you never saw before, and you feel that they had different experiences with other directors. And for example, the gaffer comes to me and the light guy, and he tries to explain me what he's gonna do, and I'm like, yeah, but what about the sky panel 30-60 here and 60 there, and you know, and I'm dropping words he never thought a director would ever know.
Absolutely, yeah.
And it's a different story from that moment.
Yeah.
And from that moment, it's like, okay, yeah, let's work together, you know?
Yeah,
you don't lose the people, and that's what I think it's a base you need as a director so you can work fast. And so...
Dude, I completely agree with that. Like, I don't know if you know this about me, because we never really got to talk so much about who we are before we worked together. But like, I went to film school at the University of New Orleans and actually studied film too. But I think everything you've said is really, really accurate. It's like New Orleans is a really, really vibrant film city. They had these extreme tax cuts, and like most of the films you saw from 2010 to like 2017. Was all shot in New Orleans, no matter where in the world it was set. And then the tax cut changed. Now it's Atlanta. Now Atlanta has like the highest.
I didn't know, actually. What are the movies from New Orleans?
Everything. Like highest, like $150 million blockbuster films, all the way down to like every independent, you know, Sundance, Tribeca film. Like so many films are shot there, but they're not placed there in the story. The story is like Seattle, or it's... you know, Dubai or something, but they say like, oh, let's shoot it in New Orleans. We build a set. We do some CGI in the back. Let's put, you know, The Rock here.
That's interesting because, you know, if you hear New Orleans, New Orleans, sorry.
you're right. New Orleans is right. You
think about music first and then, you know.
Totally.
It's
jazz music. It's like unsuspecting.
Yeah.
No, totally.
Yeah. Funny thing, because I didn't know you have been studying film at a film school, yeah.
I mean, so, cool. But what I was saying is like, what you said is right, because I worked on so many, of course, student film sets, a few commercial sets, some feature sets, and you get exactly that impression that some directors, and I can't speak for everyone I worked for, but a handful for sure, didn't know the language of the people working under them. And to be able to literally go up to gaffers and use the language of the lights, and to be able to tell the cameraman, okay, I want, you know, a wide angle lens, or I want telephoto, or like what kind of, if you want film grain, if you want, how exactly you want it shot, how you want it to look, what kind of lighting you want, your blocking, which for those who don't know means like what you want the characters to do in the room, like open this book, move to this corner, sit on the bed, and you know, like that's something that separates like a good film director, someone who understands the job, as opposed to like just someone who has that vision. And there's nothing wrong with that guy. There's nothing wrong with the guy who just like, I see this picture and I got to get it down. Sometimes they make great stuff. But
exactly
that working
guy.
It's
just a way to, yeah.
It's just a different way. It's just a way
to work. And to, it's a workflow.
It's a workflow.
Like, I like to see it as a, yeah, it's as teamwork, you know,
yeah.
Overall. It's not just this guy sitting there and for me. It's
yeah,
not,
in the
not,
in the little like in the little monitor box, you know.
Yeah, I can't. I don't want to be separated from the crew. You know, it's
yeah.
like I want to fight with them there, and then,
yeah, and you want them to fight
it's more
for
fun
you
for me. Yeah, and
yeah,
exactly. And I made the experience that they will fight with you if you're one of them. You know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, it's like, oh man, 4 hours. Over time,
oh yeah,
we oh, hate yeah. the director, and then you know if that starts, it's like a virus on set.
Dude,
and then
you would be blown away yeah. by the stories that I get from my friend Cody. So like my best friend back where I grew up has ended up working like pretty regularly as a stand-in, but also of course everyone does PA work and he does all kinds of stuff, but more regularly as a stand-in. On shows like Ozark, he worked on Loki.
Oh,
he worked cool. on Disney's Jungle Cruise movie, like all these big productions. And he worked on Spider-Man No Way Home, I think, or Homecoming.
As a stand-in, right?
As a stand-in, yeah. And he has the craziest stories of like unfunctionality, like people just not this machine not working. And in some cases, like in Ozark, Jason Bateman. Is a very good director and has like this amazing relationship.
Oh, he directed it by himself, right?
Bateman directed, I think, almost the whole first season, and he always directs a couple of episodes every season. Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know, but I like him. I like his kind of humor.
I love him.
He's great. I mean, in movies like Kill the Boss, and you know.
Yeah.
I just love this humor. Yeah.
Yeah, he's something else. And so, like, it's really cool to, like, I hated working on set personally. I wasn't sure at first when I started school what I wanted to really do. You know, like, I was just this nerd who was obsessed with movies. And I knew probably the only way I was ever going to make a career in it doing what I really wanted to do would be, like, a film theory teacher, which is so not kind of what you go to film. You don't go to film school to be the theory teacher. You know,
yeah.
I wanted to just nerd out on movies and like talk about Kurosawa and like all this stuff. But what I ended up finding was like I started acting, which led me into like writing things that I could act in. And then that turned into, oh, hey, you're a musician, right? Would you want to like put something under this? And that led into like, oh, I love that. It's the work is done. I don't have to be on set. Now I can just write music for it. Oh, that was the best feeling ever.
Yeah. So you don't want to come back as an actor? Because I think you
I would
could
love
be a great actor
that.
As well. Yeah, I know.
I would love
so,
you can smell
yeah,
it.
We,
I'm
we
dripping
already,
in it.
I know. We already, actually, I mean, we are sitting in the writer's room for the second season right now with your beautiful girlfriend, wife.
Mm. Well, my you wife, Ify, yeah.
Your wife. Oh, yeah. Yeah. And yeah, we already... We are already looking for the perfect
American tourist.
The perfect American tourist role you could play. Yeah, we already talked about that. So
I always told her I was like,
be aware
you know,
of.
I always told her whatever projects where there's a possibility, if there's someone who shouldn't be there, it's a perfect role. Or I can do German, but as long as they're allowed to have an accent, then it's okay.
Yeah. Of course, I know that. But thank you. I just wanted to say thank you for the great music. I love it.
David, we're gonna be really stroking each other here because I'm very thankful for the opportunity. The show is great, and I really loved doing it. We haven't even said the name of the show. I'm sure I will have introduced it. But so the name is officially Wrong Uncensored. Right, it's like this little add-on. Okay. So, why was this uncensored add-on to the?
It's a legal thing.
Okay.
Because there is already a show called Wrong, and I hated it to add something to this, like perfect short title.
Yeah.
but it's a German thing, you know. I think no one would ever mention it, or like no one would ever call RTL and say, "Hey, we have a show wrong, called wrong as well. What the fuck? We're gonna."
No, they would never remember that.
But no one would ever do that. But a German thing is like, we have to do it like safe as possible. So yeah. we're gonna add a random word to it, and yeah. And now it's uncensored, and the funny thing is nothing is uncensored. It's like everything is censored.
Yeah, that's the funny thing, was like, it says uncensored, but the whole point is that it's a mockumentary, so the graphic parts are censored out.
Are
pixelated.
Are censored, yeah.
Yeah. So that doesn't make any
sense at all, no.
But it's kind of a nice, I understand your point completely, and it's silly, but it almost has this nice marketing thing to it, where it's like, wrong, uncensored, you know, like it's just like, oh
yeah,
filthy.
I mean, that works exactly, and you know, in combination with the with this nude poster we
exactly
we made, it's perfect. Like, it's a marketing thing, of course, because RTL isn't known for fiction yet. Like, I would say that RTL is like more a reality show, scripted reality, and
right.
dating shows, many naked people. So, you know, we thought a naked poster would be like the perfect thing for all the people going on RTL Plus and just want to see another dating show, maybe now with nude people, called
great,
Wrong
Uncensored. It's a really great gimmick,
actually. Perfect, because they just click it and then...
Then they're hooked.
By chance, they will love it. And yeah, that was the PR.
I wanted to ask, like, just before we go too deep into Wrong, just because I did want to say, because I know that you're short on time, just that thank you for that chance. And I'm really happy with where you pushed that music into. Like, there was a window where, you know, maybe it was like we were a little unsure and stuff, but then it came out and... You and I are both, I think, equally happy with the result, and
yeah.
I love it. I really, and I'm thankful a lot for the chance to do it.
No, nothing to be thankful for, man. Thank you.
I wanted to ask you about Pestana.
Oh yeah.
Can you talk a bit about Pestana? So this was 2017. Was this your first official short?
It was my first short after film school. Yeah, it was in the last year of film school. We just decided to do this road movie kind of short film. Yeah.
It's
called Pestana. It's a Portuguese word, actually. And
it's Pestana.
It's Pestana. It's a Portuguese Pestana. Word, and it means I don't know. In Germany, we say wimper.
Is that to
how do you
blink?
Call it? It's not eyebrow. No, not eyebrow.
Oh, eyelash. Eyelash.
Eyelash. Yeah, eyelash. So it's the Portuguese word for eyelash.
Oh, okay. Well, first off, like, was this something that you'd worked on a lot throughout those years, or just like it was a thesis project? You got funded from the school and you just cranked it out.
Yeah, we got funded from a German TV network called BR.
Bayerischer Rundfunk,
exactly. And it was like, you know, I worked with Titus, who plays like Titus right now in Wrong.
I was gonna, he's next on my list about asking you about him. Yeah,
it's like we know each other since fifth grade. Fifth grade in Oxford. Yeah.
That's crazy.
One of my best friends, and Dennis, I studied with him like at film school, so we know each other for a long time.
That's
and
a
we,
good crew, man.
We did, yeah, and we decided to make Pestana. It was like we had a great idea for a screenplay about two girls who are in Portugal with their class. And they decide to just to escape from the hostel and have a good time. And then they meet some tourist robbers, also teenagers who are like poor and just rob tourists. And it's and they decide to join them, and then it's a dramatic end, but I loved it because the making of this movie was like even crazier than wrong, because we just decided to do it. We got only 10K or something from the Bayerische Rundfunk. Wow. And they just told us, okay, just do it. And we just went to Portugal 1 week before shooting, rented Airbnbs, never told them we're gonna shoot something in there, and we had the screenplay, and the actors met each other in Portugal for the first time.
Oh wow! Okay, so no rehearsals before. Like,
no rehearsals, and we were lucky that Ryanair had like super cheap flights at that time. It was. I don't lie, it was $17.99.
No,
not 17. Not 70, 17, 99 for each of them. And we're like, yeah, let's go down there.
You're just throwing cash out at the pilot. Like,
yeah, and we just shot it on the road. We just really shot it on the road. Man. And we were like, we had two cars and one camper van. And then we drove down the Portuguese coast. We were like, okay, this scene, this could be a cool place for this scene here. And we just shot it there. It was 2 weeks shooting and having fun with the crew, and I like it doing it like that and shooting movies like that.
You strike me as the type.
You feel like a family, yeah.
Yeah, I family type, because, raw, in the moment, fresh.
Yeah, it can't be just the product.
No,
it should be also like the way and the time you're shooting. You should have fun.
Yeah,
and if that's not there, then you just do the wrong job. Sorry, you know,
wrong job.
Wink. The wrong job. Bing, bing.
And then, like, was it the same year that you did? I'm sorry if I'm pronouncing it wrong. Ketapan. Ketapan.
Ketapan. Yeah.
Ketapan. It's also with Titos, right?
It's also with Titos, and how do you call it? Main role.
Yeah, in the main role. Yeah.
The main role.
Yeah, this was a series idea, right?
It was a serious pilot, but a bit too early, I think. It would be easier to sell it right now.
What was the main story behind it? What was the main
story
idea?
Was about cops, German cops, who are taking... they're like DA, you know, DA cops, like having... the main subject of this department was drugs. So they took the drugs from the police department, or I don't know how you call it, where all of the drugs are being stored in the...
Like in the inventory. You
know? Yeah, inventory at the police department, and they
the evidence
took
room.
And start to sell it to people secretly, and
I like that.
It's like a drug lord story, but from the other side. And the funny thing is, like, we shot it, I don't know, 2016-17 or something, and 2021 in Munich, the newspapers, all of the newspapers wrote about police guys, about cops in Munich doing exactly that.
You're kidding me.
Yeah, you can read it.
I didn't see that. I didn't know about that.
Yeah, they sold cocaine to people, like.
And Munich cops are like famously never doing anything at all, mostly saving bicycles.
I don't know if, I mean, I knew they do stuff, but what they they will.
Oh man, that's crazy.
They won't leave you even if you have a half of a joint or something. That's what they do. Yeah, they Because the whole so system crazy. it's like a game. They get points for, you know, for busting people.
Right, sure.
Even
yeah,
if it's
a
just
quota.
A joint, you get some points for that, and then you can level. That's the crazy thing about the cops in Munich.
There was
but
this...
I like him. I have to say I like him.
You have to say you like him. You have to say yeah. like there was this documentary. So Munich has a documentary film festival, and like, I don't know, 4 or 5 years ago now, me and Ify went with a couple of friends of ours, and we didn't know what it was. It was a documentary that was focused on... Have you ever seen the Spielberg film Minority Report?
I think I saw it.
It's with Tom Cruise. It's with Tom Cruise.
It's Tom Cruise. Yeah. It's like a futuristic story.
It's about predicting crime. So,
oh yeah, it's like a Black Mirror episode, like
kind of. Yeah, right? It's in that vein. Kind of, yeah. Mm-hmm. So the documentary was about this real technology that's happening now that they're trying to implement, where you predict where in certain neighborhoods crime might take place. Which is obviously they're focusing on, you know, kind of racist math, but they're basically looking at certain like urban neighborhoods.
Probably, yeah.
So, but the funny thing was about it, they interviewed cops from like Chicago, Brooklyn, London, and Munich, right, of all places.
Mm-hmm.
So they go to these cops in Chicago and they say, well, why don't you tell us about the kind of crime that you're experiencing in Chicago? And you see this like war-torn officer with like... you know, bags under his eyes, his skin is gray, he's chain smoking, he's like, we had a fucking murder yesterday, a poor girl got her guts ripped out and dumped in the gutter, you know. And then they go to New York and they're like, so what's the kind of crime? He's like, they're selling crack cocaine to the babies on the street corners, they got women strapping up, split in half. And then they go to Munich and they're like, what kind of crime do you have? And it's a very serious documentary, right? And they go to the cops in Munich, they're like, well, In the Max Vorstadt, there's lots of Fahrrad, lots of bicycles being stolen here at the U-Bahn. And the whole
in the documentary.
Went, yeah.
Okay, no way. But
and the whole audience was like,
is it supposed to be a funny documentary or is
not
it,
at like, all, dude? Not at all.
Real crime and then. Okay, that's crazy, but yeah, that's exactly what they do.
Well, at
but
least
we're
now
safe,
we know.
You know. It's you know. Isn't it good to feel safe here?
Yes,
Munich?
Yes, like, dude. Come on,
you
I'm from New Orleans.
Safe. It's yeah.
Yeah,
it's a different story, isn't it?
It's a whole different world. I mean, New Orleans. I was very comfortable going to bed hearing gunshots.
You did really?
Absolutely, crazy. Most of the time. And then you come. It depends on the neighborhood, of course. But then, like, you come here. And you can you can leave your groceries outside and forget, like, I left my bag of eggs outside, and it's still there.
Yeah,
it's crazy.
So
like,
many
they,
times
they
just
don't
forget
need it
to lock my car and my like forget stuff, and then you come back and it's still there.
It's still there, sometimes man. It's wild. It's wild. I mean, like you
it's
balance
wild.
It out.
It's great. Yeah,
I was gonna say like you balance like you accept this. The terms of like pickier people and like more conservative sort of like, I don't know, a little bit more closed-minded people in a sense, but you're exchanging that for the safety, you know?
Yes.
I got to say, I want the safety.
I want the safety too. It's okay. It's,
yeah.
It is.
I just want
to. It just feels safe.
It feels
especially
safe.
If you raise kids, you know, and you don't have to worry. I mean, of course, there are also things happen.
Sure. It's not perfect, but it's much better than a lot of cities in America. It's just like polar opposite.
So I'm not totally against cops. So I think they do a good job in the end. But yeah, sometimes they're really picky if they just want to bust you.
I wanted to ask, actually, because part of the show, like the reason that you technically qualify to be a guest, other than me just wanting to talk with you, is like, one, you're artsy fartsy, you're director, writer, producer, actor, but you're an immigrant. Technically, you are not born and raised in Germany. Is that right?
It's right. Yeah, I'm not born and raised here.
Are you from Kazakhstan?
Code. I'm from Kazakhstan, like Borat.
You're from
like Borat. Yeah.
You don't look anything like those guys.
Yeah, exactly.
No, that's crazy, man.
Like, I was born there. Yeah. And I went to Germany 1994, I guess. And we had my father's family already lived here. So my father has relatives? No. What is the word?
Yeah, your father had relatives here in Germany.
Relatives here in Germany and in Austria, and then and my mother in Kazakhstan. So is from Kazakhstan, and then we decided to go here, and
what was the choice? Like, he has family here, but why move?
Because you thought. Yeah, you saw all of the photos and videos from your uncles and aunts, and it seemed to be a better world.
So
it was a perfect decision because, I mean, I'm very thankful that my parents at some point just decided to go here to Germany. Because everything happened here to me. I don't know if that would be possible.
Do you think you had like more opportunities here, better education, better lifestyle?
Definitely. I mean, I don't know if the Kazakhian commercial industry is that big there, but you have definitely a better film education here, I would say, because you have you have better film schools here, and it's European. You have all of the European connections here. It's different. I'm thankful. I don't say it's a worse country than Germany. I think Kazakhstan
Germany,
is
no,
beautiful.
It's definitely not. It's like worst country. No, not even close. No. No way.
No. I mean, it's if you, I've been to Kazakhstan. Like, I don't know. The last time I've been there, 2007, because my aunt is still living there.
I was about to ask if you visit at all, if you go back there.
I did, but I should go there again, but I don't know. It was 7 years ago or something. I've been there.
What was the population like of your, was it a town? Was it a city? Was it a village? Like,
it was the capital, Astana. Oh. I don't know how the capital is called right now. So I was born in a town called Karaganda.
Karaganda. Yeah, that's right. Karaganda.
Yeah. My father lived there in a small village. It was a small German village with German people from St. Petersburg. It's a funny thing because they had to leave St. Petersburg when World War II started because they had German roots, and the people, when the Germans came to St. Petersburg, the Russian people there decided to put all of the Germans to Kazakhstan because they were just afraid that at some point they would join the German army, you know?
Wow, that's
so they said
really
all of the German people from St. Petersburg moved to Kazakhstan and lived there in a small village. So my grandparents in Kazakhstan spoke German, actually. But I never... I mean, it was just...
David, that's actually really interesting history. I didn't know that at all. I mean, surprise, I'm American. What do I know? But
what is your history?
Like, you know, it's born in like Mississippi. You know? Yeah. Like New York, bro. No, but that's really that's super interesting. I had never heard that story before. I'm sure there's so many stories in that, but like, so you, your family spoke German in that region. Did you speak German as a child before you were 8 or 9 years old?
No. My father, neither. He just knew that his father could speak some German words.
Okay.
But it was more the grandparents.
So you had to move here. You had to move here as a kid. You knew nothing, and then you had to learn as you go.
I knew nothing. No, I went here with, I was 9 years old, and then I had to, yeah, I was just thrown into the third grade.
Fucking, that's crazy.
And I was lucky to grow up in a German village. So all of my friends spoke German, and I hadn't the opportunity to not speak it, you know. And as a kid, it's easier to learn a language.
Sure,
if you
sure.
just hang out with other children, it's like, you know, you learn the language very fast. And yeah, so I mean, I see your TikTok videos and I feel you.
I don't want you to judge me on those.
No, not at all. Because I know how difficult it would be for me to learn another language, especially German, which is really difficult.
It's no joke, so much harder than I ever could have imagined. I just took the B1 certificate exam over this weekend. I took it.
You just took it?
I just took it. Yeah, one part Friday, one part Saturday. And
so how did you feel?
Well, I'm very curious. Like, I think I passed it, but I definitely know that I didn't pass it with 100%. You know?
Okay.
I know that I didn't 100%. There's something
you needed
there.
To do your driver license or something like that. Right?
I did that. I did that last year, and it was also kind of a insane process. I learned this after the fact, but I could have transferred my Louisiana license over to German.
Is that even possible? Because you can. You can drive
well
in the States. You can drive from 16 years old, right?
So in Mississippi, it's different every state, which is also kind of a problem there. But in Mississippi, I had a learner's permit at 15, which meant I could drive with someone over 21 with me. And at 16, you got your driver's license. Vroom, vroom. And you could just act. You could drive like crazy. And I had
16,
so many accidents.
Just a child, but yeah,
man, I had so many car accidents, you can't even imagine. Like,
you had so many car accidents.
I have had so many car accidents.
So we're lucky you're still here,
dude. Well, particularly one, and you'll love this story. A friend of mine who was a very attractive guy, who is a very attractive guy, was meeting a friend of mine who's a very attractive girl. And at the time in high school, I had a crush on the girl, right? So I was kind of like possessive. I was like, no, this is like my dream girl. She's going to be my girl one day. But we were friends and she never saw me that way, ever. And so one evening, I introduced my good-looking guy friend to this good-looking girlfriend. And instantly, they have this like crazy chemistry, right? Like they're gonna hook up. It's instant, you know.
That hurts.
And I knew it. I'm there. I'm this like crazy fat teenager. Like I was so fat, and like they're so good looking. And I was like, it's gonna happen. And I knew it was gonna happen. And so I hung out with them that entire night. We didn't drink. We didn't do drugs. We didn't smoke. Like nothing. We were just awake, walking along the train tracks, hanging in the park, sitting in cars, listening to music, until 6 in the morning the next day. I was cock blocking until the next day, right?
Oh, no.
So at 6 in the morning, I fell asleep in her car.
You should have left.
I should have left much earlier, for sure. And at that morning, I got tired, and I said, all right, guys, you know, defeated. I was like, I'm going to go home. And they were like, all right, bye. Like, finally, we can make out, you know? And so
finally, this stupid motherfucker will leave.
Finally, I get in my car and I'm so defeated. I'm so sad, right? And I get it and I go, and in this particular town, there's this very long, just two-lane highway. It's long. There's cornfields on either side. It's very lonely. It's foggy. It's a Sunday morning at 6:30 in the morning. I'm driving, and I fall asleep.
You're tired. Yeah. Oh no.
And I'm going like 55 miles an hour. And I drive I go on the I veer off my lane into the oncoming lane on the left side.
Oh no.
And there's these, you know, like there's a ditch and they have a thing called a culvert. And a culvert is this little drain under a driveway so the rain can go through.
Oh,
and
yeah,
it's,
yeah,
and
yeah.
It's like this stop, you know, with this metal. So I go and I goom, I hit the culvert and my car goes like goof, goof. Goof.
No.
Goof.
And turned around?
I rolled three times.
Come on.
It's insane.
And what was the feeling to wake up while rolling?
Man, I woke up as
you remember?
I remember, of course. I remember as soon as I hit the thing, my body was like, because I thought maybe I hit like a rock on the road and I could just correct it. But I had hit this wall basically with my tire and I was up. You know, like,
oh no.
And man, I just remember seeing like the green grass and the blue sky just trade places three times.
Yeah, three times.
And I have a song about this where it's just like blue and green at 17, a petty virgin fell asleep, you know? And it's just like, boom, 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 boom. And I landed on the tires and there was no glass in the car anymore. And somehow, thank God I wore a seatbelt. Thank God came out, yeah. You know? And I was 17 years old. I crawled out of the car.
What a story.
Man,
now
I got
you're here.
I waved down a truck. I took this woman's phone and called my dad. My parents showed up. It was crazy. And the car was just basically like you took a Coca-Cola can and just stepped on it. You know, it was just like nothing.
Glad you're here.
Me too, man. Yeah. I haven't told that story in a while. I don't mean to bring it down. No, but it's really crazy time growing up there, and I don't even know how we got there. How did we get
Thank
there
God. I don't know.
We were talking something. We were
driver's license.
I recently got that. Yeah, I got that last year here in Munich, finally, so now I can drive, but I'm very careful now.
That's good. It's good because you're a father now.
Now I drive extra safe. Now I don't care if anybody has sex with
That's good.
Anybody.
Good to hear.
David, do you have to go? I don't want to hold you up if you're late.
I don't think we're going to leave. Yeah, we're going to leave right now. But
you're going to go? Okay, that's good.
If
I don't
you
want
have
you
any
to be stressed.
Other questions? No, no problem.
Let me see. I asked you about Karaganda and your first years. Oh, I wanted to ask you, do you know Alireza Golavshan?
What?
Alireza or Ali? Golavshan. He's the director from The Goldfische.
Oh, from The Goldfische. I don't know him, actually.
Okay. Know? I just wondered because I've had him also on the show. He's a friend.
Oh, what is The Goldfische? Is it a movie?
Yeah, it was a really, really funny, really good German comedy. And it was like...
Should I see it?
You should see it, yeah.
I think I saw some...
It did really well.
I saw some snippets in some casting tapes from actresses.
Yeah.
Or from it's
a story about a guy who works in like a physical rehabilitation center, like a mental and physical rehabilitation center. And he basically takes advantage of these disabled people to go steal a bunch of money.
Ah.
And it's very funny.
I should see it.
Yeah, it's very funny. He's a talented, very talented guy. And I was just wondering because I had him on the show too because his family moved to Germany from Iran when he was 12. And I thought about you because that's a very similar story.
It's a similar story because, you know, it's more a deep talk about that because, you know, I don't know if that happens to people who have like everything as a kid or is it more a psychological thing happens to you as a kid if you move to a new place and you don't know the language and you have to something in you wants to be perfect but you can't, and then I think this is what drives you to to this crazy ride where you're just trying to be like the best and the best and the best and the best, and at some point you understand, you know,
yeah,
at some point
totally.
You understand what the reason for all this was when you when you were a kid, and now I understand. But yeah, but as a kid you just think, okay, I just want to show everyone I'm better and I'm not this guy who can't speak German, or, you know, I think that this is where the motivation came from. I don't know if that's healthy, but it works. And if you look at other filmmakers or just all of the guys who you just know from being successful, you always hear like similar stories, moving to other countries, or, you know, just wanted to or didn't I don't know how to say it, but maybe family problems with their parents. It's always the same story, I think.
Yeah, it's definitely like, there's definitely similarities in how you guys both adjusted, and I think that's pretty normal. But I'm always impressed by it. I'm always very blown away to hear stories about people who are not necessarily dragged, but just taken to a different country whose language you don't know at all. And you're forced to just, as a kid, and kids are so insecure, and kids just want to fit in, and kids just want to have, like, a relationship to people.
Yeah.
And you don't even know what these guys are saying. And to be able to adapt to that and, like, become these people, like, you know, you're David Helmut. You're the German guy, you know? And then I find out, like, months after I know who you are, they from Kazakhstan. Mm-hmm. I was like, what?
What?
Like, you have perfectly acclimated and even escalated in that world. And it's very impressive, man. I think you can be really proud.
Thank you.
And you are, and I hope you are, at least.
I am. I'm proud and I'm thankful that I can do what makes a lot of fun. And that's what you should be thankful for in this crazy world. I mean,
absolutely, dude. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Man, for me, you know, if you got to go, I think that's all the questions I had. I was going to ask you about your school, but, you know, we basically talked about that. So Wrong Uncensored is out now on RTL Plus. Sign up today and start streaming. We are posting about it every day. The title track is out now. Smiling from the show Wrong. It's out on Spotify, so go stream it. And David, is there anything other than the show that you want to plug, a website or anything else before we say goodbye?
No, just go and stream it, guys.
Go watch the show.
It's worth it.
Wrong on RTL Plus. Go watch it. David, I'm gonna stop recording here when we say goodbye. But thank you, everybody, so much for listening. David, thank you for being here. This was a real pleasure. It was a really fun conversation, and it's nice to get to know you a bit more. And
thanks for having me.
It was really cool, man. All right, guys, thank you so much. We'll be back next week. Have a lovely time, and bye-bye.
Bye-bye.